Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, although the voice critter has come back again, so I may not sound like it. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. Today is Monday, January the 19th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. We are honored and blessed that each of you chooses to join us every day that you do choose to join us. And we are, of course, moving forward to the next step every time in this process of understanding and learning to apply the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness. And we decided to take another foray into the arena of being ready to breathe and look at some of the insanity of the world and do our best to do it through the eyes of love, which is, if you're going to look at the world's insanity, I suggest the best way to do it. By the way, just 1 second. We are on the road, and so we've got a beautiful sunny day here in St. Petersburg, but, you know, as I talk about this idea of going and looking at the world's insanity, you know, the truth is insanity happens, and if we have pain, turmoil, or trauma about some form of insanity in the world, and we want that insanity to end, but we're unwilling to do anything to change it, we are contributors to it, just to be aware of that. Yeshua talked about that as a house divided against itself. There's a part of me that holds energy about this event in the world, and I hate this event. Boy, it should stop. But I refuse to look at and heal the part of me that's involved. And I've heard from people, you know, we talked about this a week or two ago, and I heard back that somebody had interpreted my words as you have to go to violent movies. It's like, I never even implied such a thing was anywhere near a requirement or involved in doing the work. Choose to handle everything that's in you, and you think of some stimulus as too much for you to handle, that might be a place to go and do some work and to breathe and to work through your contribution. How can you tell if you make an energetic contribution to an insane event in the world? If you turn your eyes or your mind toward that event, you go into some sort of pain or turmoil or trauma. If you do, just be aware, energetically, you hold that energy in you. And you remember we've talked about Marcel Vogel, 23-year senior scientist from IBM, who has a camera with which to take a picture of the high-energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Everything we hold is dear and wonderful. Everything we hold is hateful and spiteful and traumatic and terrible is an energy within us. And the presence of that energy, by definition, energy is motion. And everything that's in motion sets up an energy wave. That's why Marcel was able to measure these high energy waves. And so if I hold unresolved pain around something, energetically, I set up a field that helps to contribute that, to that in the world. House divided against itself. I don't want this to happen, but on the level where I'm a creator in my heart, then I hold that energy. I actually am a vote for it to happen. I'm not responsible for it happening, but I'm a vote for it to happen. I support it in the world by not resolving what's in me. So what I've chosen to do is to sit in front of some of these things from time to time, be the space of love, go in with a commitment to hold to that mind of love in me, and where I can't, then I choose to breathe. I choose to own and be responsible, rather than saying, those flickers of light in that plastic cone vibrating over there make me mad or hurt me. I've chosen to actually grow into adulthood in that regard and say, there are flickers of light on the screen. There's a plastic cone that makes noises that sound like voices. And that brings up pain in me. And when it brings up pain in me, I choose to resolve my pain. I choose to breathe. I choose to handle that so that that's no longer an unconscious or a hidden dynamic within me. If I'm unwilling or unable to resolve those issues within me, then whenever a circumstance is attracted to me, and remember, the law of resonance in animate systems means that whatever I hold is moving toward me. When you go back to Job, several thousand years ago, Job gives us an insight. He says, that which I feared most has come upon me. When I add fear behind an energy that's held in me, I set up a field, and guess who's coming to dinner? Somebody's going to show up to play it out with me. So that's that law of resonance means that there is motion toward me by anything and everything in the world that is in resonance with what I hold. So understanding that principle, there was a time period when I would not go to a violent movie, and I was guided to go to one once, and it was just terrible. It was a horrible movie. And I'm sitting there arguing with my guidance. It's like, what am I doing here? And the response was, Michael, you have a belief in the world of bodies and that bodies can be harmed. Sit here, breathe, curse of light that represent bodies being harmed, and know that your pain comes from inside of you. Your turmoil about that comes from inside of you. And so breathe, look at your goals, cancel your goals, forgive, and clean that up in you. And then you're no longer a contributor to it in the world. So, but did I say anybody has to go do that? No. Totally, completely optional. Whatever you choose to do. But if you come to a certain level of strength, I wouldn't suggest someone who's weak in their process or weak in their work do that. That would probably be too much for them. So it wouldn't make sense to do that. But as you strengthen, as you grow in the ability to hold to that active space of love, it can be a very powerful exercise to sit and watch the insanity and watch when you tend to hold your breath, breathe through it, and change the energy in you. And as you change the energy in you, you become a vote for that happening to change in the world. So that's the principle I'm speaking of. So they just released a new film called Sniper, American Sniper, and talk about insanity. Talk about deep, deep, deep level insanity. It's actually, you know, I think there's one state you could look at it as a PR piece for, okay, guys, pick up the gun, go to war, kill somebody, that's your duty. Certainly, we'll bring that reality up, I suspect, in many people, especially young men who have been trained that to be a hero, you've got to kill somebody, that's your job in the world. If you've been trained in Greek philosophy and that belief, then this will probably inspire you to do that. I saw something different. I looked at it with different brain cells, and there were several places where I had to breathe because it's just wholesale insanity. But what really struck me by the end of the movie is that the film was extremely scriptural in its bottom line. It was, and I'm sure that the purveyors, or I suspect, of course I don't really know, but I suspect that the people who put it together and who put it out there, and I suspect their military minds behind it, weren't planning to offer this particular message. If you remember, we've talked before about Yeshua, and he's on his way to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Peter says, how many swords should we bring? And Yeshua says, bring one. So notice Yeshua is giving permission to engage in something that could be perceived as violence. And, of course, he knows exactly what Peter's going to do with it, violence. But you'll notice that Yeshua invited him to do that and then use that as a teaching moment. So Peter, you know, he's playing out of the world mind and the world myth. The good guy kills the bad guy and is the hero. And Yeshua comes out of the Garden of Gethsemane. The high priest servant is there. So now we've got the good guy and the bad guy. And Peter goes after the high priest servant's head with a sword. Now, I suspect that Yeshua might have given Peter the look at that moment. It's like, Pete, that's not what we're here for. And then he delivers a message that the world still hasn't heard. And this is what I saw in this film, was the ultimate presentation of this message. And what he says to Peter is, Peter, if you live by the sword, you will die by the sword. Know that what you engage in. Now, it doesn't matter whether the sword you use is a vicious tongue, a mind, a gun, a sword, a weapon of any kind. If you do that, then you can rest assured, because you live in a world of resonance, that that is what's moving toward you. It's on its way. And so what to me became very clear, and there's an early scene, without giving the film away, there's an early scene where the young man who's going to be the quote-unquote hero is quite young, and his father, and if you watch the scene carefully, you can just see the rage, at least the brain cells have fired in me. If I were doing that, this would be rage. The father is giving his two sons a talk about, you know, being protectors and not being sheep. And in essence, he delivers a message that anybody who won't kill is a sheep. Interesting message. And then he delivers a message to his sons that there are wolves or people who attack, and then there's sheepdogs. And I want you boys to be sheepdogs. And he takes out his belt. He lays it on the table with, again, what fired in my brain cells was quite a load of hostility. And his kids are sitting there with their eyes wide, and his wife is sitting there looking at him like, what the hell are you doing? But that's the message this young man is brought up with. And then he becomes the most famous sniper in all of American history, more kills than anybody has ever done. And, you know, shows pretty graphically the trauma of that. You don't just go out and do that and go home and have fun with your wife and kids. But that when a life is spawned in violence, it tends to continue to move in the direction of that violence, even if someone's changing their direction, which this young man tries to do. So I won't say any more so that I don't spoil it, but I thought it was an interesting demonstration of Yeshua's words, words that have not yet been heeded or heard by the world, especially the so-called Christian world. And I say so-called because there are so many people who call themselves Christian that have no interest whatsoever in what Yeshua said if it conflicts with the doctrine or the dogma of the people who told them what the scriptures mean. But he's really clear. If you do what I teach you, you will love those who hate you. You will do good to those who despitefully use you. Yes, your scriptures are full of all kinds of violence and viciousness and seeming permission from God to kill. I withdraw that permission, he says, in essence. Here's what I bring: a new understanding. I bring a new law. Now, many people have interpreted the new law to be, well, there's a new covenant, we got a new agreement with God, and there are things we don't have to. And his new law was, stop the violence. Stop. Moses, permission. You know, you hear many people quote, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. See, even Moses said you could do that. But in fact, if you read Moses' directive and you read that whole story with a mind of love instead of a mind of hostility or fear, the hostility or fear mind reads it and goes, see, justification, I can do it. But if you read it with a mind of love and you understand what's really going on, I mean, these people, for the smallest infraction, would slaughter whole villages. I mean, literally slaughter whole villages. And so Moses is saying, when you see it through the eyes of Rachma, If you get that filter set in your mind, you understand the whole scriptures instead of the past brainwashing of the culture, which knocks Rachma out of place. So with Rachma, you see, oh, Moses is saying, you guys, okay, if you got to do your violence, I don't know how I'm going to stop you, but if you got to do it, the most you can do is what was done to you. If somebody pokes out your eye, okay, you can go poke their eye out. But that's the most you can do. He's not giving permission. He's putting a limit on it. And Yeshua is giving them a new law. Delete all the violence permission in your Old Testament. Get rid of it if you want to pretend you're following Yeshua. Because he doesn't give any permission for any of that. He says, here it is. Love those who hate you. Do good to those who despise you. Tough thing to do. But you notice how powerfully he demonstrates it when the high priest's servant is injured. He doesn't go on attacking him as Peter did or say, Peter, get that sword again. Get his head. Protect me. Save me. What does he do? He acts like a human. He's inviting us into human life. He acts like a human. And he heals the man who's going to have him slaughtered. And you've probably heard me say this before, but I've had many people who respond to that with, well, did you notice that doing that got him dead? And my response is, yes, I noticed doing that got him dead. Did you notice they couldn't keep him that way? He came to demonstrate a new covenant, and that is, if you live by an energy, you will die by the energy, and if you live as a human being, then you will live as a human being. It won't matter what they do to you. That's the real new covenant. If you live as a human being, if you live as the active presence of love, and if you pick up a weapon of any kind, then you will be murdered by that very weapon, even if it's just your own tongue. You probably heard me talk before, but it fits perfectly here, the idea where somebody says, did you see what that person did? What they did was so terrible. Of course they deserve my rage. And I say, you know what they did was pretty raunchy. I agree with you. They deserve your rage. But the question really isn't, do they deserve your rage? The question is, do you deserve your rage? Because you're going to get the original, and they're just going to get a carbon copy, and they may not be home for delivery. The human being, as he demonstrated, anyone who's injured, because they recognize the injured party is a cell in their own bodies, and they bring love to that cell, and that cell begins to heal. That cell is converted. Now, conversion doesn't mean bringing somebody into your church. That's the non-being mind's cheap copy of conversion. We're looking to convert everybody in the world, but we're not interested in anybody joining any religion or having anything to do with any religion. We're interested in converting the fear and hostility-based mind back to a love-based mind, where you started and where you're designed to live. That's the conversion we're looking for. Go off and make your way in the world, whatever it is, but live as a human being. Maintain your human life. It's the most valuable possession you have ever been given. And what an awesome opportunity. And so this film, American Slaver, just a powerful demonstration of the principle. A life spawned and conceived in violence, ended in violence. Time for us to wake up. So that's my thought for today and a starting point for discussion. And I open the space if anybody has a thought for us. We'd love to hear from you. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Dr. Tim, are you with us today, sir?
I'm here and just tuned into the intro. And I mean, I've been here since the beginning, and I've been tuning into your words for the intro. And And just, I'm glad you were clarifying from the discussion last week where somebody came to think that you were saying we really should be sitting in front of all the angry, negative movies we can, because I have not heard you say that, and I've heard you say that there was a time when you didn't go to those and you avoided them, and then when you finally got the guidance to go, here's how and why. And so I echo that message when I talk about that if you feel up to it and you're strong and you've practiced the use of the tools and you've demonstrated to yourself at different levels that you are responsible for what you're feeling, and you want to take that to the next level using an outside stimulus that's safe, like a movie, can be a good way to do that, to sit down with a stack of worksheets and breathe and do the worksheets on what gets stirred up in you.
Yes.
And we talk about that occasionally in the support group. And and it is a powerful tool. And I think for most of us, especially the people that first come to these MindShifter support groups and your lectures and first get introduced to these tools, there's plenty in everyday life to trigger me, for me to pay attention to and dismantle the energies and thoughts and beliefs around that without having to go looking for negative stimulation. But
life gives us lots of opportunities to learn forgiveness. Isn't that awesome? What
yep.
a gift.
It does present lots of opportunities. And I enjoyed the intro, and so I thought, you know, you probably stirred up plenty, so we should see if somebody's got a hand up.
All right, let's go for it. Anybody in the phone queue?
No.
Or anybody in the chat room with a thought or a question for us? Comment.
Everybody that's in the chat room is guests, and so they can't speak to me. And there's several people on the switchboard, but nobody has their hand up.
Okay, well then, we're wide open. First person who pushes a button gets to tap right in, and with no waiting, you're first in line. So give us a thought, give us a question. Has anybody gone to a film or been in a film and remembered that, oh, this is stimulating something in me, this is a place to breathe? Anything to share about your experience of that? Or, you know, maybe your terror of that. Some people are like, oh my God, I couldn't do that. It's like, we're not suggesting that you do, unless and until you get to the point where you're strong enough. I personally think it's an awesome contribution to make to the world, to actually stand as the presence of love and insanity. You know, even if somebody's just watching the news, a practice for me, if I happen to get in front of a television set and watch the news, I did watch a fair bit of the reporting on what happened in France last week, and repeatedly have to go back and keep going back and keep going back to that condition of love in my own mind, so that I can shine the light of healing into minds who are sitting back, and every mind who's watching that news report is joined, pardon me, in that particular insanity to some degree. And so to really, truly be that space, I think, is an awesome gift to give the world. When most of the world is so unconscious and blotto, they don't know how to do anything except just contribute to it, just be lost in the pain of it, the trauma. The only way that someone can be lost in pain and trauma is if there's pain and trauma inside of them. You can't be lost in the pain and trauma of the world, or of a movie, or of a news report. It can certainly stimulate pain and trauma in you, and that's what needs to be forgiven. And, you know, my take is that whatever we hold, guess who's coming to dinner? Someone's coming toward us. There's an energetic attraction. The law of resonance means that in animate systems, whoever, whatever we hold, someone is moving toward us with that energy. That was Job's message. And I don't have to wait for them to show up. I can short-circuit the process. That, in essence, was the guidance I got that movie after a long time of not having anything to do with violent movies. That was the clarity that I was given. That's what I was taught, was, Michael, sit here and breathe. It's inside of you. Then you don't have to bring it about in your world. Hey, sounds like a good idea to me. But anyway. So, 646-200-4169. Honey, anybody with a hand up or a comment in the chat room?
No, no one has their hand up. I would just like to share, too, about the movie that we saw last night. Whenever it was we saw it.
Sometime in the past.
Yeah.
After the Y workshop yesterday, actually, we were both in a good, strong place.
Yeah. It was so obvious that with all the trauma and stuff that he faced when he was in Iraq, and it's a true story, by the way. That when he did come back, that it was like he was so used to that adrenaline rush to stay alive, basically. He couldn't blend back in when he came back. And just the experiences that he had with the post-traumatic stress and that, you know, over there that he felt like, you know, I guess he was alive or could do something, but he hated half of what he was doing. But it almost became who he was. He forgot who he really was in the process. And the impact that had on his family and friends, and it dramatically showed that. So while some kids maybe that aren't married might jump in and say they want to join and go fight and be the hero, I think that it also showed the other side of what tragedy would happen by doing that as well.
Yeah, that's true. I'm in full agreement with you. It did demonstrate pretty effectively what he went through. And, you know, here's a guy who starts off with his first tour of duty because he's going to be as his father. You know, goes right back to his power person dynamic. His father, in his rage, at least, again, what I perceive to be rage, programs his children that they're supposed to be sheepdogs. They're supposed to protect against the wolf. So, you know, he sees this event happen on television. His power person dynamic kicks in. The next thing you know, he's in the recruiter's office. And then he's off. You know, his father taught him as a kid to shoot. So here he is, pleasing his father. His father, actually, the opening scene, he shoots a deer. He's a young boy, maybe 12 or something. And his father's like, yeah, good for you, son. Good kill. Good shot, man. Hey, that's so cool. So here he is, the most deadly sniper in U.S. history, true story, and he's pleasing his father, our person. He's shooting left, right, and center. And, of course, another piece of the puzzle is, you know, many will get caught in the whole story, and, you know, I mean, the insanity is insane. I mean, is the whole war scene, you know, what's being done over there crazy or what? But I think another piece, which doesn't get referred to at all, is that this whole event that's happening over there was based in a fantasy and a fraud made up by people who basically their money supply is military. And, you know, the whole thing is based in a fraud. And these young men, these young men and women, Iraqi and American, are dying over something that never happened, over something that didn't occur, over something that people lied to convince us that we should make it happen and spend the money to do it. And trillions are down the tube. How many man and woman hours of creativity and life and delight and joy and contribution to the world have been lost? How much property? You know, this was a fairly wealthy middle-class country, and they are in a shambles. But, see, you know, they're oil pipelines across Iraq or across Afghanistan. You know, of course, there's a whole other conversation we had there, which we don't need to do, but I just want to put into it, if you see it, because you can get caught. It's kind of like, you know, one of the games of the mind is once it passes over an error in its logic, everything else is logical. So it looks logical to go kill these people who are killing Americans. Sure. Well, I question that whole process, but in particular, put into the equation, it was an illegally started war based totally in fraud. It's like, let's wake up, folks. Who would do such a thing? Why? Well, you know, there's an old line in that film, Jerry Maguire, show me the money. So we got a hand up, sweetie. Let's say hello to our caller.
Area code 618, you're on the air. Hi.
618, welcome.
Hi, Michael.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Gail. I'm from South Central Illinois. I'm closer to St. Louis,
welcome.
Chicago. I called in the beginning of November when Dale was on, so I've talked on the radio before. I'm still shaking like I was back in November. The reason why I called today, I have a bunch of questions, but in specific to the movie that you're talking about, Michael, what I got out of what you were talking about the last time that you said that your guidance directed you to go to the movie and you breathed through it and you canceled some goals, I was wondering if you could talk more about that process, because I'm under the impression that they didn't have paper and worksheets back in during Yeshua's time. So how did they cancel goals and go through that process, like mentally, without writing everything down?
Well, obviously I wasn't there, so I couldn't, you know, I really couldn't comment on that. I don't really chiseled in stone. No, just kidding. I would assume that they had, you know, they did have writing instruments. They did, but I'd be pretty sure that the average, you know, citizen in the street didn't have the tools of writing. So I can only assume it must have been a mental process. And of course, when you start looking at what was being done in that fairly basic and simple culture, I would think it might be a little easier to do than now, 2,000 years later, when we have all the complexities and 2,000 years of insanity between now and then. So I do suggest to people that they do worksheets in writing for sure. And when somebody says, oh, I just do them in my head, I usually sing a Paul Simon song. My observation is when people are doing them in their head, the song goes, slip sliding away. You know, the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. When we get close to what we need to look at and deal with, the tendency is to want to hide it from ourselves. And what I've found is, you know, we happen to have a benefit that they didn't have back then, and we can put it in writing, and we can record our subtlest thoughts and be conscious of them and have a way to keep them there right in front of us, which if one is not doing it in writing, they don't have. And so that would be my comments on it. And, you know, how do they cancel goals? The same way you and I did. You recognize that I have a commitment to have something happen for me or for someone else. And when I load that into my mind, I recognize that it stimulates my hostility or fear. And if it does, then I want to cancel the goal that stimulates my hostility or fear and forgive from my heart the wrongs of my brother. The other thing I would offer is that, you know, I've been working with this particular tool in particular for about 30 years. And I still don't know what I don't know from the Aramaic. You know, the translation work on the manuscript stopped about the late 70s, mid-70s, because the project ran out of money. And so we're still working with just what we have from back then. I have worked toward creating funding to take the manuscript project to the next level. I don't know what else they had. I don't know what else they understood because, you know, this culture is so primitive in its thinking and its understanding. You know, in this culture, our understanding or our discovery, so-called discovery of the unconscious, happened, what, I don't know, when was that that Freud got the Nobel Prize for discovering the unconscious? You know, 70 years ago, I don't know exactly, but whenever it was, 80 years ago. So we've had the development of an understanding maybe over the last 70 or 80 or 90 years. The Aramaic had it as first nature. It was just part of their understanding of the culture. So how far that goes and what we don't know about what they understood yet, I don't know. You know, I was having a conversation with somebody last week, and we were talking about Rachma, and they were talking about the Greek idea of, well, you know, Jesus said you love your neighbor and God as yourself. And, you know, I suspect you've heard me talk about the translation. You know, when the fellow from Russia comes to the workshops and this Russian translator does all the translating for us, and And after spending several days with this person from Russia that I can't communicate directly with, I asked the translator to tell him that I think he's really cool. And the translator turns to him and says, Michael thinks you've got a low body temperature. He translated my words perfectly, but he didn't say a word about what I meant. It's meeting that's important. So when I say you're really cool, that means I think you're a great person. You know, I like being with you. I want to make sure we stay in touch. You know, a lot of implications to that. And so what are all the implications that go along with what else is in the Aramaic? I don't know. We only know what we know so far. And I suspect there's a whole lot more and maybe bigger, much bigger pieces of the puzzle that we just don't have yet. So hold the space that we can put together the funding to together a large enough translation team to take that work to the next level and that we're guided. You know, I recognize that as I've worked with this, I have been taught. I have worked to make myself available to be taught. I haven't figured it out. I'm really clear about that. But as I've made myself available to be taught, I've literally, you know, I mean, I've come out of the meditation and been given word changes to make to the teaching that where I was in error. And so each of us can advance that understanding, I think, by being willing and being available to be taught. And, you know, the real teacher, your intuition, your inner tutor, is the one who will ultimately teach you the truth. You won't learn it from me. You won't learn it from Jesus, from Yeshua, or from Dr. Tim, or from Jeannie, or anybody else. The inner tutor, when you become available, will teach you. And to me, that's what all the work is about, is being made ready for that to happen and available to the deeper level of teaching that is on its way to each of us. And we're creating a space and building the brain cells to make ourselves and others more and more available to that. So does that kind of at least approach your question?
Understood. I want to take a little bit different of an angle with that. I heard everything that you said.
Okay.
And I didn't realize how much we didn't know about the Aramaic. I wasn't aware of the studies being shut off in the 70s or whatever. Which is really too bad.
Well, the translation work. The study has gone on, but the translation work stopped in the 70s. So, you know, how much more is there for us to understand from the Aramaic New Testament? I don't know. That's what I'm holding the space for us to be able to get that to the next level.
Gotcha. What I was thinking was, like, for instance, if I went to Walmart and I saw something that was offending me and I didn't have a worksheet right there available for me, do you have any suggestions or is there any technique that you do in that moment until you can get a hold of a worksheet and work through it? That was what I was hearing that you were talking about when you were talking about the movie, that you were doing that basically, that technique while you're watching the movie and canceling goals. That's what I heard you talking about, is that you're confronting it. You didn't necessarily have worksheets right there with you, but you're able to do that until you were able to get a hold of some paper. So,
well, I don't need paper to know that I've got a goal in my mind that is stimulating my pain at this moment. For the first piece of advice, if I went to Walmart and I said, you know, what if I saw something that offended me? The first thing I'd be wanting to do is to stop lying to myself and recognize that nothing can offend me, but if I've got offense in me, lots of things can bring it up. So if I want to, you know, heal myself, then in the situation where I look at something and the reality that comes up in my mind is offense, then I want to heal my offense. I'm going to look at what's the goal I have. Well, you know, I look at a painting that is crudely suggestive, and I might want to look at, gee, you know, I would really love for the painter to have integrity and sensibility in how they present human situations. And so if that was my goal, I'd be canceling. I'd be doing forgiveness right there on the spot in that very instant. I'd be canceling my goal for this artist to have sensibility and represent human relationships in a decent way. If it were, some sort of a comedy routine that's being done with the vulgarness of the comedy today in the world. And I wanted the comedian to speak respectfully about human relationships, or maybe it'd be more specifically, you know, some of the words that are used for body parts in our culture, in the, especially in the so-called comedy world, then I'd recognize, that my goal is for this comedian to speak respectfully about his own body and the body of women in his life, or for her own body and the body of men in her life. So if that were my goal, then I'd be looking at canceling that goal. I'd be inviting Rooka in, and I'd be looking to move the energy to me that's coming up in response to that stimulus of that which my mind says is offensive. Does that make sense?
It does. Understood. Thank you.
And if I felt like I didn't get through it as I'm standing there looking at that, and I got home, I'd sit down and do a full worksheet on it. I'd go into the deeper level. And remembering that, you know, in the worksheet, there are a number of different tools besides just the forgiveness process. There are several tools there. And so, you know, if I felt like that brought so much up in me that, well, I got kind of calmed down, but I know I'm not finished with that issue, then I'd be picking up the worksheet and going to the next depth of what I need to look at in that regard.
Okay, understood. I guess my next question is, I want to be a snowflake. I definitely have thought about going to, I've made a commitment. I'm going to change my words there. I have made a commitment to go to Orlando in April, and also to be in Heartland in July, or this summer. This is what I've been looking for. I've been looking everywhere for something like this.
I understand.
I've tested it. I've done worksheets. I have a pile. I have more to do, and I'm committed to doing that. In the meantime, I guess my question is, until April, short of following you and Jeannie all over Florida, or moving up to Crystal Lake and becoming one of Dr. Tim's clients, is there any groups in St. Louis that are going on?
Yes.
Or anybody in St. Louis that you could hook me up to?
Absolutely, for sure. And let's see. Spell your last name for us.
B-O-G-G-S.
Okay, Jeannie, have you got a note of that? And I assume you're in our database?
I am.
Okay.
I believe so.
Well, I'll tell you what. When we finish the show, I'll look you up in the database, and I'll give you a call, and I'll give you a name and a phone number of someone to contact. I don't have their permission to give it out over the air, so I won't do that.
But
I'll definitely do that. There is a lady who's working with the support group there, and we're looking at perhaps coming back to St. Louis in maybe July, June, and doing some more work there as well. So.
Okay, fantastic.
Cool.
I have
awesome.
One more question, and then I'll let somebody else in.
Fabulous.
I was wondering what maybe the spiritual ramifications of attention deficit disorder is. I've heard you talk about other things and said, hey, this was due to something. I can't even think of an example at the moment, but every time that you talk about RACMA and that being a filter for the frontal lobe of the brain, I think of attention deficit disorder being the right frontal lobe, and I just wondered if you had any thoughts about that.
Well, in my experience, and we'll ask Dr. Tim to kick in on this too, because he's probably got more experience with it than I, but in my experience, I think that people who have what they call attention deficit disorder don't have a disorder at all. My take would be that usually the person who has that label is actually someone who has been brought up in a world that has been threatening and attacking for them. And that in that threat and attack, they have learned that they don't settle too long on any one object of attention. Because, you know, maybe when they were three, they you know, got into this art project and they were so, you know, we've all gotten lost in reading a book or doing a piece of art or something, and we're lost to it, and all of a sudden we're blindsided by maybe an older sibling or a parent who's just, you know, out in space somewhere and have been hurt. And so having experienced that repeatedly, I think that I'm not spending too much time in any one arena because I'm going to get hurt if I do. So their mind is motivated to keep jumping from object of attention to object of attention so that they're always able to be scanning their environment to keep from that attack happening. And so stepping in, you know, the fear when we do a personal code evaluation, if you're going to be planning on coming to the intensive, you know, you might, well, I'll talk to you about that when we call, but maybe if you want to go ahead and get that set up, then we'll go ahead and send you the personal code evaluation and give you some feedback, you know, early so that you can be working on that. But if I would suspect that one of your challenge, or whoever you're talking about, whether it's you or someone else, but that the challenge is fear. And, you know, the first thing with the fear, the first assignment we give people, if fear is their challenge, is to trust Rukka. That there is this elemental force that if we stay connected to it, it will always warn us. It will always tell us what's coming. And if something comes, whatever comes, if we stay connected to that, we're always going to benefit from it, even if it's something that seems to be injurious and painful. And so trusting Rukka is the first assignment on the personal code evaluation for people with a challenge with fear. And I think that would be the most common link or the most common challenge. And the personal code evaluation breaks the mind down into 10 areas. And fear, I think, would be the number one related to that. Dr. Tim, do you have any input or thoughts about that? Hello,
well,
Dr. Tim.
Just agreement. I think that what we see over and over and over again is when we can help people train them to return their thoughts to that loving, positive frequency, all kinds of things shift. And until that happens, we can't even get a good assessment. That's like what it's so nice about your personal code evaluation is that it bypasses so much of the self-report and the logic and really helps people tap into what's going on in their thought and their energetic, emotional focus. But if you can get people to cancel the goals and focus on the most loving thoughts they have and stay in that calm space, all the intellectual capacities increase. And if people are in hostility or fear, all of the intellectual capacities decrease. So that, you know, my offering would be that you can't even get a decent assessment for attention deficit disorder as this constellation of symptoms. You have to understand that there is no such thing as attention deficit disorder, just as there is no such thing as depression, you know, as a word, as a quote. It's not even as specific as German measles, where they could take a blood sample and say, oh yeah, here's the thing that's related to German measles. Well, they don't have anything like that for depression or for attention deficit disorder or for obsessive compulsive disorder. We simply have a collection of symptoms that we've given a name to. And if you stick around long enough, they will change the name they've given to it, or they will change the symptoms that are required for them to be able to say, here's the label you have because of this pattern. So it's a real important thing. It's a real important thing to understand, because people talk about it as though it's this real thing. And it's driving my life, and it's this. Well, and it might be that a pattern of symptoms or behaviors is having a major influence on your life. But that's important to recognize that that's not happening because somebody put something in your coffee or because you were born with this chromosome or that chromosome.
That has been the best explanation that I've ever received. I'm the one that has attention deficit disorder. I was diagnosed when I was 32 years old, and I've asked about spiritual stuff, and I have been told that, hey, your past life, this is what happened, and this is why you have it today. But definitely the explanation of something happening when I was three and not being able to have a focus of attention, being hypervigilant and not allowing myself to really focus, is that's spot on for me. So, yeah, I totally and completely understand everything that you said about fear and how doing worksheets and starting to allow Rachma to remove that, not Rachma, I'm sorry, Luca, to remove that energy, how that would be beneficial. So thank you. Finally.
Well, there's a great line in the scriptures that ties right in to this whole principle. And what it says is, you know, here's the Creator talking to humans. It says, if you're in harmony with me, if you're in touch with me, you can walk through a battlefield, or 1,000, or 10,000 will die, and you can't be touched. You've got support. Now, if you trust carbon-based memory in the past, then you're limited and locked into what carbon-based memory can do for you, which is, you know, well, we'll just keep protecting ourselves. We'll keep looking from place to place to place to our own detriment so that we don't get attacked again. You know, there's an interesting scriptural quote that says, you know, the sins of the fathers will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations of those who hate me. And that, you know, that's ostensibly the Creator speaking to us as humans and says, and what it's saying is, you're going to be stuck with the patterns of your generations if you are separated. The word there in Aramaic is not hate as in a love-hate relationship, but those who are separated from me. So if we are separated from the active presence of love, then what we're locked into is the creation of our generations. Whatever's gone on in the past is the instruction set that will run our minds in any given situation. When I go back to trusting Rukka, I go back to full relationship with the Creator, where I'm designed to live, then I'm not stuck with the instruction sets of the past. I have the Creator's mind available to me, and I'm protected, and I'm taken care of. And everything that comes to me for my benefit, even the things that seem like a disaster, will come to me for my benefit.
Understood.
But you've got to shift the generational mind, the multi-generational database, into that level of trust. Now, some people can tap into that level of trust just by hearing a name. Like, for instance, you know, there's a situation with Yeshua in the scriptures, and there's this woman who has this 12-year issue of blood, and she just knows. Her faith is that if she can touch the hem of his garment, she'll be healed. That's what it's going to take for her mind to be able to shift. And when she does, bang, a 12-year really severe disorder in that culture. You know, this woman couldn't even go in and make food for her kids. So that severe disorder disappears, and of course people want to lay that at Yeshua's door, that he did it for them, but he says, no, it was your faith. He pointed to her. It was the fact that you shifted your mind that has made you whole. And so what is it going to take for any individual? You know, when we do an intensive, we start out with what makes an intensive work, and we talk about several factors. And what I know is that I don't know what's going to make them for you or Charlie or Bill or Harry or Mary or Hortense. What I know is that in 45 years, I've studied every factor I can find that helps to make that happen, and then I introduce it all, and, you know, somebody might make a half a point shift in this factor and a half a point shift in that factor and a 4-point shift in that, and all of a sudden, bang, there's their healing part. Bang, their thing's open. And the next person who's got exactly the same thing going on in their mind, those factors aren't going to shift them. So that's why one has to pick up, take responsibility, and do their own work. And as these factors come into play, you know, it might be the nutritional shift when one does the fresh and raw food. It might be just the space that's created by a community of people who are about healing themselves and supporting each other. So, you know, we'll introduce in the intensives every factor we possibly can to support each person in making the shift that we know can be made.
I've felt, just by doing the worksheets, I felt a lot of shifting with the attention deficit disorder and the depression that I've experienced. So I totally, I agree with everything that you've said, and I look forward to doing more work.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll be in touch. Jeannie,
okay,
do you have the spelling of her last name?
You said Dobbs?
Boggs. B-O-G-G-S.
B-O-G-G-S. Okay, got it. Okay.
Your first name again is?
Gail. G-A-I-L.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, Gail. I'll look forward to talking with you. Bless you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for your great questions. Right on track. Awesome.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Okay, we have about 3 minutes, and we do have a couple more callers, so we're not going to get to all of them, but the first one's 808. You're on the air.
Yeah, aloha. This is Valentine. I'm listening to you guys.
Aloha. Aloha, young man. How are you?
Good.
We're down to about 3 minutes, so have you got a quick question or some way we can support you?
No, I wanted to respond to about that what you opened the show with, because I had calls in and out, and I had to get back on the line again to listen to you. Anyway, regards to that American Sniper, when you mentioned about the movie, about all the violence, and it seems like you said, the culture, you know, if you're going into, you know, Oprah brought this out, if you go and you look at the history of the United States going into all these countries, 52 wars, for what reason are they going to countries to take power or oil or whatever the reason is? Why do we have a United Nations? Why can't we speak and get what we need instead of all this violence that continues to perpetuate more violence, right?
I agree. Let's heal the violent parts of our minds and create a space in our culture where healing gets to occur. And we are down to just the last few seconds, so appreciate your call. We're going to have to
the week, whatever. I just wanted to touch in a little bit. And you guys have a blessed day.
Okay.
And then we send our rainbows here from Maui. Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. So we're down to the last minute or so. And so we'll just invite you, if you are in St. Petersburg all this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We'll be back tonight doing On Creating Consciously. Tomorrow night is Healing Through Relationships. Wednesday night
What
is the World from A Course in Miracles? And we're working on getting that recorded. If that comes together, we may have that on video. What is the World? And then we'll do communication. Did you hear what I think I said? And codependence to interdependence on Friday night. So if you're in the arena, come join us. We appreciate you. Have a blessed day. Create the best year yet of eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.